morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Coming up today, we'll listen more to what the Republican arguments were yesterday in the Senate against removing President Trump from office. We'll also talk about some of the other major news stories, both here in Florida and around the country and around the world. And we'll open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. First, let's start with listening to the closing argument about why President Trump should not be removed from office from Republican White House counsel Pat Cipollone yesterday. He was the last one to speak, and we're going to hear what he said about not removing President Trump from office. And as we listen back to these sounds, we encourage you to send an email into the studio giving us your thoughts on what we're playing, and then in a few minutes we'll open up the phone lines and take your phone calls about what we're playing. But here is White House counsel Pat Cipollone.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the Senate. Well, I had kind of a lengthy presentation prepared, but I think you've heard a lot from our side, and I think we've made our case. And so I just want to leave you with a couple of points. First of all, thank you, Mr. Leader, and thank you, Democratic Leader Schumer, and all of you for the privilege of speaking on the floor of the Senate and for your time and attention. We really appreciate it. We've made three basic points. One, all you need in this case is the Constitution and your common sense. You just look at the articles of impeachment. The articles of impeachment fall far short of any constitutional standard, and they are dangerous. And if you look to the words from the past that I think are instructive, as I said last night, they're instructive because they were right then and they're right now. And I'll leave you with some of those words.
There must never be a narrowly voted impeachment or an impeachment supported by one of our major political parties and opposed by the other. Such an impeachment will produce the divisiveness and bitterness in our politics for years to come and will call into question the very legitimacy of our political institutions.
This is unfair to the American people. By these actions, you would undo the free election that expressed the will of the American people in 1996. In so doing, you will damage the faith the American people have in this institution and in the American democracy. You will set the dangerous precedent that the certainty of presidential terms, which has so benefited our wonderful America, will be replaced by the partisan use of impeachment. Future presidents will face election, then litigation, then impeachment. The power of the president will diminish in the face of the Congress, a phenomenon much feared by the founding fathers.
This is a constitutional amendment that we are debating, not an impeachment resolution. The Republicans are crossing out the impeachment standard of high crimes and misdemeanors, and they are inserting the words any crime or misdemeanor. We are permitting a constitutional coup d'etat, which will haunt this body and our country forever.
I warn my colleagues that you will reap the bitter harvest of the unfair partisan seeds you sow today. The constitutional provision for impeachment is a way to protect our government and our citizens, not another weapon in the political arsenal.
I expect history will show that we've lowered the bar on impeachment so much, we have broken the seal on this extremely extreme penalty so cavalierly, that it will be used as a routine tool to fight political battles. My fear is that when a Republican wins the White House, Democrats will demand payback.
Now here, Pat Cipollone is replaying members of Congress from 1999 defending Bill Clinton. These were Democratic members of Congress arguing back in 1999 that Bill Clinton should not be impeached. The last voice we heard was Charles Schumer. We also heard Bob Menendez and Senator Markey, the current senator from Massachusetts, Edward Markey. These were all what they said back in 1999.
You were right. But I'm sorry to say you were also prophetic. And I think I couldn't say it better myself, so I won't. You know what the right answer is in your heart. You know what the right answer is for our country. You know right what the right answer is for the American people. What they are asking you to do is to throw out a successful president on the eve of an election with no basis and in violation of the Constitution. It would dangerously change our country and weaken forever all of our democratic institutions. You all know that's not in the interest of the American people. Why not trust the American people with this decision? Why tear up their ballots? Why tear up every ballot across this country? You can't do that. You know you can't do that. So I ask you to defend our Constitution, to defend fundamental fairness, to defend basic due process rights, but most importantly, to respect and defend the sacred right of every American to vote and to choose their president. The election is only months away. The American people are entitled to choose their president. Overturning the last election and massively interfering with the upcoming one would cause serious and lasting damage to the people of the United States and to our great country. The Senate cannot allow this to happen. It is time for this to end, here and now. So we urge the Senate to reject these articles of impeachment for all of the reasons we have given you. You know them all. I don't need to repeat them. They've repeatedly said over and over again, a quote from Benjamin Franklin, "It's a republic if you can keep it." And every time I heard it, I said to myself, "It's a republic if they let us keep it." And I have every confidence in your wisdom. You will do the only thing you can do, what you must do, what the Constitution compels you to do. Reject these articles of impeachment for our country and for the American people. It will show that you put the Constitution above partisanship. It will show that we can come together on both sides of the aisle and end the era of impeachment for good. You know it should end. You know it should end. It will allow you all to spend all of your energy and all of your enormous talent and all of your resources on doing what the American people sent you here to do, to work together, to work with the president, to solve their problems. So this should end now, as quickly as possible. Thank you again for your attention. I look forward to answering your questions. And with that, that ends our presentation. Thank you very much.
White House Counsel Pat Cipollone ending the Republicans' presentation yesterday in the U.S. Senate, defending President Trump against possible removal from office. And so the trial will continue today at 1 o'clock. There will now be questions and answers. Questions from Democrats to Republicans and from Republicans to Democrats about what has been said so far. And you'll be able to hear the trial, the continuation of the trial today at 1 o'clock on WMNF's HD3 channel, The Source. And you can find it easily online. You can go to WMNF.org/listen and find the HD3 channel and listen back to it. Well, what'd you think of the Republican arguments that began on Saturday and then continued on Monday and Tuesday? Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. The impeachment trial is giving Senator Mitt Romney a big moment again. He's defying his fellow Republicans at President Trump's impeachment trial by insisting that witnesses testify, specifically former National Security Advisor John Bolton. The Utah senator was the 2012 GOP presidential nominee. He's now a back row Senate freshman. He may get his way on witnesses. Last night, Majority Leader Mitch McConnell told Republicans that McConnell doesn't have the votes to block the drive for new testimony. Here's a report from the Associated Press.
Senate Republican leaders apparently don't have the votes to block witnesses from being called in President Trump's impeachment trial. According to an inside source, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's told senators privately there are not enough votes to block new witnesses from being called in President Trump's impeachment trial. The Republicans have a 53-seat majority, so just a few defections would mean witnesses would be called, something Majority Leader McConnell was trying to avoid earlier this month.
Democrats' case cannot simultaneously be so robust that it was enough to impeach in the first place, but also so weak that the Senate needs to go fishing.
But news of a manuscript from former National Security Advisor John Bolton yesterday had some GOP members like Mitt Romney in favor of new testimony.
It's important to be able to hear from John Bolton for us to be able to make an impartial judgment.
Jackie Quinn, Washington.
Now, in response to that, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said yesterday the Republicans are welcome and even have the power to call their own witnesses.
My view is that one of the reasons they haven't, they have the power to do it already, is because they know they would make a joke of the trial and they would look very, very bad as they're further trying to distract from the truth.
Well, let's take a few phone calls on these topics. So let's go to Eli in Tampa. Eli, thanks a lot for calling. What are you thinking at this point?
Well, obviously, smoke screens are being thrown out. So they know they have no kind of defense against, you know, the truth of what has been presented to them. Every week, or almost daily now, they being presented with the butt of any defense that they may present towards this president. So obviously, they know that they don't have now the majority to vote no defense. And now everybody's starting to, at least three out of the four, starting to talk about, hey, we need to go ahead and look into having the witness. So, yes, I think they're going to end up having to do the right thing. They're going to end up doing the right thing and get this guy out of office. Or at least bring in some kind of a witness.
And Eli, which witnesses should be called? Which, when you want to hear from witnesses, who do you want to hear from?
Obviously, the people that has been involved, like the Mick Mulvaney and Michael Bolton, and his Secretary of Defense. Those guys need to be on the stands to be talked about. So I know they want a tit for tat. So if they bring those guys, they're going to want to hear from Joe Biden's son and possibly Joe Biden. But you know what? If they have to go to that, let them throw the smoke screen, because just those three guys alone would basically shut down this defense that he's trying to propose.
So you wouldn't mind if Hunter Biden were to testify?
Well, you know what? If that's what they want, give it to them. Because we know they said that whole investigation has been debunked already. And the fact is there. And these guys are blindly are just false, just lying. They should be penalized or be held accountable for lying in Congress like that. Because I know I would. I'd be in jail. And they flatly lying like that.
All right, Eli, thanks a lot. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
All right, thanks for making your point. All right, we're going to open up the phones to more people in just a moment. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. And if you want to talk about the impeachment trial so far, you can call us up, 813-239-9663. You can also email the studio here, dj@wmnf.org is our address. In other news, and I'm going to mention a few other news stories that we might talk about, Israel appears to be heading for a showdown with the international community over its half-century-old settlement expansion enterprise in the West Bank. Emboldened by a supportive White House, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has announced plans to move ahead with the potentially explosive annexation of large parts of the occupied West Bank, including dozens of Israeli settlements. But his announcement comes as the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court is preparing to launch a war crimes probe of Israel's settlement expansion policies. Yesterday, Netanyahu was at the White House, and he announced, along with President Trump, what they called a peace plan. But Palestinians are saying it has nothing to do with peace. Here's a report from the Associated Press.
President Trump has unveiled his long-awaited plan for peace in the Middle East, but it's already been rejected by Palestinian leaders.
My vision presents a win-win opportunity for both sides.
President Trump at a White House ceremony surrounded by Israeli and Christian leaders, but no Palestinian officials, unveiled his vision of Israel annexing its settlements in the occupied territory, keeping most of Jerusalem and allowing a Palestinian capital in the outskirts of East Jerusalem.
A realistic two-state solution that resolves the risk of Palestinian statehood to Israel's security.
While the Israeli prime minister was ecstatic, there were protests in the West Bank, and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas said 1,000 no's to the proposal, calling it nonsense. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
So we could talk about that, too. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Richard, who's in Tampa. Richard, what would you like to comment about so far?
I'd like to comment about the witnesses that need to be called so we can really hear the truth on all sides.
Okay.
So, I mean, we need to get Bolton up there. We need to get Giuliani up there. And if so be it, we need to get the Bidens up there. And we need to clear and clarify through all this stuff for the American people so we can find out what the real truth is. What's wrong with that?
And Richard, Chuck Schumer, the Senate minority leader, just said if the Republicans want to subpoena the Bidens, they can do that. They have enough votes right now to do that. What do you make of that?
I think they should. I mean, if somehow the Bidens are tied with this, and if they are guilty of something, then that needs to be exposed. But if they are innocent, well, then they need to be exonerated because they've been dragged into this. And the finger's been pointed at them, and they've been used as a scapegoat to do with distracting away from the truth. So the truth should be told.
There seems to be a real move, especially on the Republicans' part, to end this quickly. Do you agree that it should be ended quickly, or how much time should the Senate take deliberating this and conducting this trial?
Well, it looks like it's sort of a chess match, and they're exercising their certain powers on each side to go ahead and manipulate, you know, time. So I guess the Democrats feel they have time on their side, and there's no reason to rush this thing. And what Mitch McConnell was trying to do, thinking that everybody on his side was going to come to what they thought was the solution of not producing witnesses, not producing evidence, and they were going to try to block everything. And then, you know, the credibility of that is a lot of the Republicans are not going to stoop to that. You know, they carry morals and ethics and values and honor on their shoulders, like Mitt Romney and some of these other people. And they're going to get swayed. One way or another, the truth's going to come out. They want the truth to be told, so we'll see.
All right, Richard, thanks a lot. Thank you for the phone call. And let's go to John and Lutz. John, what are your thoughts so far?
Hi, Rob. I just wanted to mention, I just recently got a text from Trump saying that he hasn't gotten a chance to bring forth his witnesses to prove his innocence, and I just think it should be fair to him. I think he should be allowed to have his witnesses.
So that's how he's appealing to his supporters. He's saying that it's not fair, I haven't been able to bring forward witnesses, and you're saying, okay, bring them forward.
Yeah. I mean, if the impeachment goes through in the Senate without witnesses or evidence, there'll be forever a doubt whether, you know, he really was able to fully prove his innocence. And I think he should be given every opportunity to prove it.
All right, John, thanks a lot. Thanks for that. I haven't seen that. I get a lot of the president's stuff. I haven't seen that one. John, thanks a lot.
Sure.
All right, and let's go to Robert in Sarasota. Robert, thanks for calling. What are your thoughts so far?
Well, my thoughts are that both parties are welcome to call witnesses. I think the witnesses can only help to reinforce what I consider the already established facts. And the fact that probably some of our most respected members of the State Department and International Diplomatic Corps, had tested the fact that he should have been impeached and is impeached is beyond me. Why there's so much partisanship in this country is incomprehensible to me, and I don't understand that why Republicans would choose party over Constitution of the American public, especially when 75% want to see the witnesses.
So if the witnesses would only reinforce already established facts, then we don't need witnesses? Is that what you're saying?
No, I think if they want to choose, if they can vote on behalf of witnesses for both sides, whether it's the Bidens and the Giuliani and Pompeo and anybody else they need to call, I think it'll just be a foregone conclusion that it reaffirms the facts that are already established. The other fact is that it doesn't appear that the Republican Senate will vote him out of office. So ultimately it becomes academic. And my opinion is that the Democratic strategy is to tarnish and undermine President Trump's reputation so he doesn't get reelected in 2020.
So they know that they're going to lose at the Senate level, but they're going to win in November. That's what you're saying they think.
Well, that's my theory of what I think the Democratic strategy is. Because they know they don't have the votes to remove him from office.
And you think that's a winning strategy?
I do. I think that's the best strategy they can employ at this point in time.
All right, Robert, thanks a lot. Thank you for that.
Have a great day. Thanks.
Great to hear from you. Greg writes this: it seems that Pam Bondi on Monday was at the wrong trial. She was at the Joe and Hunter Biden trial. Yeah, Pam Bondi, the former Attorney General of Florida, spent about a half an hour on Monday talking about Hunter Biden. Charles in Tampa asks, why is Mitch McConnell not up on perjury charges for stating under oath that he would be impartial? Well, I don't know who would bring charges against him. Who would be the body that would bring perjury charges against him? I don't know. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Judith in Tampa. Hey, Judith, you're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Yes, I just wanted to say that there is no parallel here between Biden and Trump. Donald Trump asked for a quid pro quo. He's the one who is being examined, and there's no reason to call witnesses for the Republicans to call the Bidens. I mean, what do they have to do with it?
I think the Republicans would argue that the president was trying to investigate corruption using Rudy Giuliani as private attorney and was reaching out to Ukraine to begin an investigation into possible corruption. I think that would be the Republican argument.
Well, that's all fine. That's all well and good. But what he said was, I'll give you the aid, but would you do me a favor, though? And for him to tie aid that Ukraine needed so desperately to getting information or dirt on his political opponent is a crime.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty clear that, at least from the testimony we heard in the House, that the president didn't really want an investigation. He wanted an announcement of an investigation.
Right.
Yeah. All right, Judith, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, cool. Great to hear from you. 813-239-9663. I'm going to suggest a few other news stories that we could talk about. Pentagon has raised to 50 the number of U.S. service members who suffered traumatic brain injuries in Iran's missile strike earlier this month on an Iraqi airbase. It's the third time the number of injuries has been officially increased. The new casualty total contradicts President Trump's initial claim that no Americans were harmed in that attack on the Iraqi airbase. In Tallahassee, two bills to expand gun rights are moving through the Florida House. Both were approved by House Committee yesterday. One would allow churches, synagogues, and mosques to approve carrying concealed weapons at their places of worship, even if they're on school property where guns are banned by law. The other would let local government officials carry concealed weapons during their public meetings. Members of the House Criminal Justice Committee cited several shootings around the country as they voted for the bills, and I think only three members of that committee voted against it, one Republican, two Democrats. But the overwhelming number of Republicans and Democrats on that committee voted to expand gun rights here in Florida. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Frank, who's in Sarasota. Hey, Frank, you're on M&F.
Hi, Rob. I just want to say that, you know, despite what one of your callers said, Trump has had ample time to bring his witnesses forward. He hushed them all up. He wouldn't allow them to come and testify. And he's been invited to testify. His witnesses have been invited to come and testify. Even Bolton said he wouldn't testify without a subpoena. So all that is nonsense, that Trump tweet or Trump, email that he got today. And the other thing is, I'm not even sure. I read a long article about Hunter Biden in the New Yorker about 6 months ago. I'm not sure if you saw that. I'm not even sure Hunter Biden has ever even been to Ukraine. The fact that he lent his name for cachet to the board is not really a crime. And there are plenty of people who are sit on boards around this country and around the world who are not, you know, qualified to be there. Paul Ryan sits on the board at Fox News. Other than lying in front of a TV camera, I don't think he has any experience in communications. So Hunter Biden is not going to go in there and incriminate himself, and neither is Joe. So I think it's all a waste of time.
All right, Frank, thanks a lot.
Okay.
I think the question is, were any laws broken? So did Hunter Biden use his father to violate any laws? Was there any corruption? If there was, and remember that these stories began to be reported in 2014. At that point, Republicans could have launched their own investigation. They certainly launched an investigation into Benghazi back then. Could they have launched an investigation into Hunter Biden? It was well reported by the mainstream press. It wasn't the press that now the Republicans hate, that the fact that Hunter Biden was given this position was reported by the mainstream press back in 2014. So if it was a problem in 2014, should the Republicans have launched an investigation then? They certainly had the power. They investigated Benghazi for years and spent tens of millions of dollars investigating Benghazi. Why is this issue coming up now? What do you think? 813-239-9663. Let's go to Al, who's in St. Petersburg. Hi, Al. You're on M&F.
Hey. Good morning, I guess. Yeah, they're investigating Biden. The only flying over that is, why aren't we investigating the Trump family with all the nonsense they're pulling left and right?
Well, the Trump children and the Trump in-laws, the second generation Trumps, have all sorts of business dealings all over the world. It's true. And they have gotten some favors, especially by the Chinese government. Should the Democrats launch an investigation to that?
Yeah. I mean, it's good for the goose. It's good for the gander. Come on, give me a break.
Yeah. The Democrats have not done that. They are the House, as far as I know, has not launched an investigation into the trademark deal that Ivanka Trump got from China in 2018.
Mm-hmm, correct.
So yeah. Why do you think? I mean, if the Democrats, you know, there may be something wrong there. We know the president had a meeting with the Chinese prime minister, and then shortly afterward, the trademark deal was arranged or was granted. So why do you think the Democrats are not investigating that?
Hey, God only knows, but as far as I'm concerned, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Okay.
My last word.
All right, Al, thanks a lot. Good to hear from you. And this is 88.5 FM WMNF in Tampa. Let's go to John in St. Pete. Hey, John, you're on M&F.
Hey, Rob. It seems interesting to me that Donald Trump has sent Rudy Giuliani, his private attorney, to make policy for the country. And I think he did it because he can claim client-attorney privilege. so therefore Rudy can't testify. Do you think that's true?
He might have thought that out. He might be a chess player. I kind of doubt it. I think the president is not a chess player. Who knows what the president's reasons are? I don't know. But I would say that if I was concerned about corruption and I was the president, I would ask the attorney general to investigate corruption. And I would say, hey, look, there may be a problem here with Hunter Biden on the Ukraine Energy Board of Burisma. Would you investigate? That's what I would do as president. I would not send my private attorney over there. Now, why the president, if the president was thinking, well, it would cover him in the future, maybe. I just don't know. I'm not inside the president's brain.
Well, it just seems, very suspicious that you wouldn't go through normal governmental channels.
And I agree 100% there. I mean, there are government channels that can investigate corruption. And why he didn't use those channels, if he really thought there was corruption between Hunter Biden and Burisma and Ukraine, the president didn't use those channels, that baffles me. I mean, it baffles me, too, that the Democrats don't seem to be pointing that out in Washington.
Well, it just seems like you're hiding something when you go around the normal channels that everybody uses. I mean, everything is hidden with this guy. And that's suspicious in and of itself to me.
All right, John, thanks a lot. Thanks, John. And this is WMNF in Tampa. There's so many other news stories I think we should talk about, too. Let's go to Lee in Winter Haven. Hey, Lee, you're on MNF.
Yes. Hello. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Wonderful. I wanted to talk about Congress appropriated money to the Ukraine. The Ukraine had been threatened and invaded once by Russia, and therefore Congress appropriated this $340 million for the Ukraine. So for President Trump to withhold this money repeatedly over a period of time, and OMB, Office of Budget and Management of the federal government, kept asking the executive office, kept asking President Trump why this money had not been given to the Ukraine after Congress had appropriated the money. And so that itself is against the law. It was a huge error on Trump's part not to give the money. He did it for personal gain. He wanted quid pro quo, which means he gave them something, which would be the $340 million for military aid, and then the Ukrainians, he wanted them to do him a favor, which was get dirt on the political opponent, Biden. So, obviously, President Trump is guilty. Now, whether he is removed from office or not, I believe is not the main issue. The main issue is to educate the American voter as to what kind of man we have as our president. And we have seen President Trump almost start a war with Iran within the last few weeks by killing off their head of state. President Trump gave...
Yeah, he wasn't the head of state. He was the head of their military. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Correct. Yeah, well, you're right. He was head of the military. And that is similar to if another country had killed off one of our military leaders. Wouldn't we retaliate if a country killed off one of our top military leaders? Of course, we would be furious. And, of course, the Iranians were furious. But, obviously, we almost came to a war with Iran in the last few weeks because of Trump's mishandling of this. And that's why I am going to vote for Bernie Sanders. The last election that we had, presidential election, Bernie Sanders came very close to winning that election. His name recognition is incredible. People know Bernie. People trust Bernie Sanders. And I believe that that's the way it's going to go in November 2020.
All right, Lee, thanks a lot. Thank you for your phone call. All right. There's a few other stories I just want to throw into the mix here before we go back to the phones. Authorities say a Central Florida man who repeatedly harassed parents of shooting victims at the Sandy Hook Elementary School has been arrested. In Lake County, the sheriff's office there says a man named Wolfgang Halbig is charged with unlawfully possessing another person's identification. Halbig often appeared on the radio show of conspiracy theorist Alex Jones, and Halbig was sued by Sandy Hook families for defamation. The mass shooting in Connecticut killed 20 first graders and 6 adults. The Orlando Sentinel reports that Halbig repeatedly emailed people the social security number, birth date, and other information of Leonard Posner. Posner's 6-year-old son Noah died in the 2012 Sandy Hook attack. An annual congressional report says that the U.S. budget deficit is likely to burst through the symbolic $1 trillion barrier this year despite a healthy economy. Here's another report from the Associated Press.
It's been some 8 years since the federal government spent $1 trillion more than it took in. But this fiscal year, according to the Congressional Budget Office, the Trump administration is expected to do just that. Unlike the last such deficit in the Obama White House's fourth straight year of spending its way out of a recession, this one comes during an economic expansion. Economists blame the Trump tax cut and the budget deal that increased spending on both defense and domestic programs. The CBO estimates that the yearly deficits will remain above $1 trillion, with the total deficits in the next 10 years of $13 trillion. Tim McGuire, Washington.
So we can talk about that, too. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Roy in Orlando. Hey, Roy, you're on M&F. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thank you. I just have a quick question. I'm naive about this. I understand that the brain injuries for our servicemen was initially reported as no one was injured.
That's
and
correct.
And now we're up to 50.
That's correct.
Is there a way to know what was communicated to President Trump at the time of the raid and what was not? Because going from 0 to 50 seems pretty suspect to me. I'm going to hang up and listen on the air. Thank you.
All right, Roy, thanks a lot. I'll see if I can dig up the initial stories on that. I don't know what was communicated to President Trump. I do know that the president downplayed the initial rocket attack on the U.S. bases or the Iraqi bases where U.S. personnel were housed. So I know the president initially downplayed that. I'll see if I can find some direct quotes from the president from that time. But I won't say what he said, but I'll see if I can find the direct quote. Roy, thanks a lot. And if you're out there listening and you can find the direct quote, it's hard for me to do the research and host the show at the same time. You could call us up and tell us what you think. We have about 30 emails that I haven't read. 813-239-9663. David writes this: I find Trump's team's primary defense argument to be very twisted. Instead of focusing on Trump's wrongdoing, they argue about the effects of dumping Trump on the upcoming election. That is a ridiculous argument. Certainly doesn't excuse Trump's reckless rhetoric and dangerous actions, writes David. And then Peter writes, who is on trial here? It's no one named Biden. They are only involved in this farce because of Trump's paranoia. A Biden subpoena would be a joke. Bring on the guy with the white mustache, writes Pete in Tampa, suggesting that John Bolton should be brought in. Let's go to Bill in Rabonia. Hey, Bill, you're on M&F. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Rob. I don't know. It looks to me like we've already seen this playbook in the Kavanaugh hearing. They get in a little trouble, the Republicans, and then, you know, they end up having to call a witness, maybe two, and then in the a sheer power play, they ignore anything else and just take a vote. And I think that's what's going to happen again.
So if the Senate votes not to remove President Trump from office, then where does that put us? Let's say that that happens in a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Where does that put the country?
Waiting for the next election.
Okay. And is that okay with you?
Not what I prefer.
Yeah.
But that's what I believe. Mitch McConnell understands power. And he's got it. And he's going to use it.
All right. Bill, thanks. Hey, Bill, does Rabonia still have a Mardi Gras celebration?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Is that coming up
soon?
Coming up in a few weeks, right?
Yes.
All right. Bill, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Great to hear from you. And let's go to Kevin in Bradenton. Kevin, you're on M&F.
Hey, Rob. Great show. I just wanted to mention something about the deficit that you just mentioned, the $1 trillion ceiling they just broke through.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and make a prediction. As soon as the talks starts to center on the issue of the deficit. Here's the next thing that you're going to hear from the Republicans, and that is that we're going to have to cut Social Security and Medicare and all these other things that people need desperately. And I just want to bring up, and I'm certainly not an economist, don't have any education in that regard, but when the economy is doing well and the interest rates are at a historically low rate, and then if the economy were to turn down, there's not the same levers that in the past they've had a chance to use to stop the turndown, because they've already lowered the interest rates so much. So my point, and I'm sorry I'm belaboring this, is just that there's a big elephant in the room that nobody's talking about because the air has been sucked out by Trump and all the things that he's been doing. But I honestly believe that, you know, economic freedom is very important. And I think that this is going to be another chance for the people that have always wanted to slash these programs to just prove that this is, you know, why we have to do it, rather than pointing to the excess spending on, you know, defense or President Trump's golf course trips or whatever. I don't know. What do you
think? I think you're spot on when you say that you run out of tools by already giving tax cuts in the midst of a fantastic recovery. The president and the Republicans gave tax cuts, which weren't really needed. And then what they did was they are spending money like drunken sailors. It's what the old libertarian argument used to be, but now the libertarians in the White House are spending money like drunken sailors. You don't spend money until you have to.
And that is so true.
Anyway, so all right.
One more thing, real quick, Rob. I want to say this about Greta Thunberg, however you pronounce her last name, Munchkin or whatever that guy's name is. Had said that she needed to take a class in economics because she was saying that they need to divest from fossil fuels. I think that history will prove that she may know more about economics than the great Steve Munchkin or whatever his name is. Thanks, Rob.
All right, Kevin, thanks a lot. So one of the earlier callers asked what the president was told about the injuries to U.S. service personnel in the first attacks on the Iraq air bases. And I think I found the soundbite. This isn't what the president was told. This is what the president told us. Let's listen back to President Trump from a few days ago after those missiles were launched at bases housing American soldiers in Iraq.
Initially, you said repeatedly to Americans that after Iran retaliated for the Soleimani strike, no Americans were injured. We now know at least 11 U.S. service men were airlifted from Iraq. Can you explain the discrepancy?
No, I heard that they had headaches and a couple of other things, but I would say, and I can report, it is not very serious.
So you don't consider potential traumatic brain injury serious?
They told me about it numerous days later. You'd have to ask Department of Defense. No, I don't consider them very serious injuries relative to other injuries that I've seen. I've seen what Iran has done with their roadside bombs to our troops. I've seen people with no legs and with no arms. I've seen people that were horribly, horribly injured in that area, that war. In fact, many cases put those bombs put there by Soleimani, who's no longer with us. I consider them to be really bad injuries. No, I do not consider that to be bad injuries, no.
All right, so the president comparing those 50 head injuries to headaches there and getting, I think, confused between who was actually fighting back against us after we invaded Iraq, blaming Iran. Well, the initial pushback after we invaded Iraq was from holdouts from Saddam Hussein's regime. So I think the president there should be fact-checked. I can't fact-check him right now, but I would be very interested to see how many people had their arms and legs blown off by Soleimani. Certainly they were blown off by holdouts from Saddam Hussein's regime. 813-239-9663, and let's go to Chuck, who's in Tampa. Hey, Chuck, you're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
Is Steve Munchkin still in the administration?
I think Steve Mnuchin. I meant to correct him. It's not, Mnuchin.
I think Munchkin's office is right down the hall from Michael Bolton's.
But anyway,
no, he is still in the administration. Of course, Michael Bolton is a great singer.
Michael Bolton.
Right?
Yeah. I want to talk about the poll numbers for Washington Post, ABC. 44%, Trump's highest yet since this impeachment started. Have you seen those?
I really haven't been watching the polls. I don't do a lot of poll watching.
44%, he's got a 56% job approval rating. That's Washington Post, ABC. One more thing. Wait a minute,
Chuck. Chuck, I know he doesn't have a 56% job approval rating either reported by the Washington Post or ABC. I know that is incorrect. And again, you've caught me off guard. You're just throwing out numbers that are not true. And again, let me beseech some of our listeners who have actual computers to do the research for me. But the president's disapproval numbers are over 50%, Chuck.
Of the economy.
I'm saying that the president's disapproval numbers are over 50%.
No. 44% is his approval, 56% handling of the economy.
Well, that may be true, but I think the key number for re-election is do you disapprove or approve of the president's performance in office?
Well, that's debatable, but one more thing. Did you see 175,000 people in New Jersey last night and signed up with Trump?
Well, always people oversign up in New Jersey. I think the interesting story out of New Jersey is that the mayor there in Wildwood was not allowed into the rally because he complained to the Philadelphia Inquirer that the president was staging a rally in his town where he had to get police to accompany the president. It cost Wildwood money, and the mayor said, look, we can't afford it. We want the president's campaign to pay for it. And the president's campaign is saying, no, we won't pay for it. And there's a string of cities across the U.S. where the president holds a campaign rally, and then for all the services that are incurred, he doesn't pay for it.
Well, that's not my point. My point is, in New Jersey, I mean, do you think there's a bunch of hillbillies blowing on whiskey jugs, driving off in their pickup trucks at that rally?
Well, I think, you know, even in Tampa, Chuck, more people sign up for the rally than attend. That's not unusual. People, I think, get the idea on a Wednesday, next Monday I'm going to go to the president's rally, and then the child gets sick or they have to stay late at work, they can't go to the rally. So it's not unusual for lots of people to sign up to go to the president's rally. It's not unusual.
It's not a sign. The place was packed. There were people camping out since Monday. The rally was last night.
Yeah, and that happens all over the country. I mean, people do camp out. I met a woman. I'll tell you a quick story, Chuck. I was at the last Trump rally in Tampa, which was at the fairgrounds more than a year ago. And there was a woman who was probably in her late 50s. And I was standing next to her. We went in together. She was a Trump supporter. I talked to her. I asked her why she supported the president. And she liked the president very much. She traveled around the country. She traveled around the country to see the president. And she was very devoted to the president. And she was thrilled to see him that August day in Tampa. And we had a pretty good conversation. At the end of the conversation, she said, you know what, though? I'm really concerned because of something. And she said, I don't know if I should tell you. I said, well, you can tell me. And she said, I don't have enough gas money to get back home. And she had worked in the insurance industry. She had just been laid off. She's been traveling around the country to see the president. And she was in her late 50s. And she said she didn't have enough gas money to get home. She lived in Clearwater, and she was over at the fairgrounds. And I said, well, can I give you some money? She said, no. She said, I'll find a way to get back home. But this woman was in dire straits, and she was hoping that the president would make her life better. So, yeah, I'm sure people travel all over the country to see the president.
Well, that was a great story, and I appreciate it. But is it Trump's fault she didn't have gas money? I mean, what's
no, the I'm not saying it was President Trump's fault at all. She was very happy. She thought the president was improving the economy, even though she got laid off, even though she had very little money. She still was supporting the president.
10-4. All right. Well, look at that job approval number.
I will. You keep saying job approval, and you're mixing it up with approval of his handling of the economy. You can't mix up the two. Chuck, let me read a story to you. This is interesting, and I think, Chuck, you'll find this interesting. Politico is reporting this this morning. This is a brand new story. The headline is, Trump allies are handing out cash to black voters. And this is a story by Ben Schreckinger, who's written some tough stories about Democrats in recent days, but this is a Ben story today. He says, organizers have begun holding events in black communities where they lavish praise on the president while handing out thousands of dollars in giveaways. Allies of Donald Trump have begun holding events in black communities where organizers lavish praise on the president. The first giveaway took place last month in Cleveland, where recipients whose winning tickets were drawn from a bin landed cash gifts in increments of several hundred dollars, stuffed into envelopes. A second giveaway scheduled for this month in Virginia has been postponed, and more are said to be in the works. The tour comes as Trump's campaign has been investing its own money to make inroads with black voters and erode Democrats' overwhelming advantage with them. But the cash giveaways are organized under the auspices of an outside charity, the Urban Revitalization Coalition, permitting donors to remain anonymous and make tax-deductible contributions. So you can look that up, article up today on Politico. It's free and very interesting. 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. Edward writes this, if they subpoena all parties like Bolton, Pompeo, Biden, etc. for testimony, then obviously the Senate should subpoena the president and ask him under oath his accounting of the charges. That's Edward out there in cyberspace. Let's go to Ben in Tampa, who's been holding the longest. Ben, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Yeah, hi. Okay, first it was zero, then it was 11, then it was 34, now it's 50. I'm expecting to hear the next one going to say so-and-so many people died from that attack. It's like they're over here just getting prepared in case they have to have an excuse to attack Iran again.
Yeah, I don't know. I hope it doesn't go up.
Ben, I hope it doesn't either, yeah. And I hope they don't use it as an excuse for another escalation.
Yeah, I hope we don't go to war. All right, Ben, thanks a lot. Thank you for that. Let's go to Marielle, who's in Indian Rocks Beach. Hi, Marielle.
It's Marie, but that's okay.
Oh, Marie, sorry, I'm sorry.
It's okay, Ron. I really appreciate your show all the time. I call in often. I'm not versed in political language, but I value the opinion of people like me who have something to say anyways. I think my biggest concern with Trump supporters at this point is that at this point in my life, what I'm trying to teach the kids around me is that you're supposed to have, you know, each other's back. You're supposed to have a tribe mentality where we help everyone, including the absolutely weakest. And I had a Republican tell me that they believe that people who weren't able to work or had mental issues, you know, well, somebody's got to pay for their insurance, and I don't think we should. And I said, you know, I told them my father-in-law had a brother who was born way back in the day with a disease, and they were embarrassed, pulled him out of school, put him in a room, and that's what they did in the old days. The kids just, anybody who was sick, they hid away, embarrassed. They never got the support they needed. And is that the kind of world we want to live in now? You think we had some enlightenment through the years that we understand that helping the absolutely weakest person makes us a stronger tribe and a country? But these people, especially the religious people supporting Trump, who say that abortion is against the law or against God, but the minute the child's born, they're not willing. You know, the government doesn't want to help anybody. We're going to force you to have kids, but we're not going to help you take care of the kids. We're not going to give the money for the education for these children. These people all believe in money, and that is the bottom line. And it makes me disgusted and sad, and it causes division in families and neighborhoods. I mean, it's heartbreaking to me to see this, because they're not trying to bring everybody together. It's all separation. We're better than you. We have a job. It's your problem if you can't feed yourself. If you're handicapped, who cares? It's your issue.
Yeah, it's really a sign of how the quality of a society, how we treat the least of us in society. Marie, thank you very much. Thanks.
All right. Have a nice day.
You too. If you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001. We'll play your comments back tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for NOLA. He's coming up next right here on 88.5 FM. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks for listening. This is WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg. And in the next few minutes, we're going to hear the latest news from NPR. Remember, over on our HD3 channel, The Source, at 1 o'clock this afternoon, we'll be carrying the latest round of the trial, the impeachment